We had a kid who went hunting, killed a deer, but didn't want to be tardy for school. So he had it in the back of his truck. And we're like, let's go check it out. So we all went outside to go check out his kill from that morning. So cool victories.
Welcome to the Teachers on Fire podcast. I'm your host, Tim Cavey, and today I want to bring you another edition of the Teachers on Fire Roundtable. These are live-streamed conversations meant to warm your heart, spark your thinking, and ignite your professional practice. You can view and interact with the show live every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Central, and 11 a.m. Eastern on the Teachers on Fire channel on YouTube. Today's roundtable is brought to you by Fidgets. Keep listening to learn how you can bring a free starter kit from Fidgets to your PBL, makerspace, or coding classroom. This episode is titled Rural Education. What comes next? Enjoy.
Today we're talking about rural education. What are the wins? What are the challenges? What does the path forward look like? I'm going to ask my guests to introduce themselves and talk briefly about your context in education, starting with Melody.
Hey, everybody. It is so nice to be here, Tim. Thank you for inviting me. And I'm with friends and I love this. And I'm in Alaska right now, right outside of Anchorage in a little town called Eagle River. I started teaching in 2004 in a small town in Texas, Pottsboro, Texas, if you've ever heard of it. And that's where I started out as a teacher for my first 3 years. And it's funny because I was talking with Dr. Casey down below just a few weeks ago. He wrote the book Thinking About Teaching, and it's based on a rural social studies perspective. And I hadn't really thought about where I came from in the rural education system, but really I love that I have those 3 years because I think that's what gave me the confidence to be a leader. So I'm so excited about this conversation. And I've seen a lot of Alaskan educators. They wear many hats. So I respect rural educators. I mean, like, they do everything, like, and some of the jobs they do, we've never heard of, you know, in larger urban areas. So I'm glad to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us, Melody. I've been a big fan for a long time. This is a real treat for me to connect with you. Tammy, over to you.
Hi, my name is Tammy Neal. I have been teaching rural education my entire career. This is my 30th year in education. Some of you may know me from my Twitter escapades. The Rural Ed Chat is on some COVID hiatus right now. The Florida Ed Chat also on COVID hiatus. But in my daily life, I am a computer science middle school teacher in Suwannee County, Florida, and also an esports coach. So we have a middle school team and building an esport network, middle school network here in Florida. So that's me in a nutshell.
All right, let's hear it for esports. That's a great unifier, and I'm sure we'll come back to that later on. Casey.
Good morning, Dr. Casey Jacobowski. Please call me Casey. The doctorate I earned by talking about rural schools. I am very good friends with Melody, who is the author of the I'm Sorry Story, phenomenal book to read. But one of the areas that I'm very proud of is that I started my career in rural education. I've always thought about rural education. I have the honor of teaching in high school classes right now for college-embedded coursework. One of the areas that I discovered having taught in small upstate New York's rural districts is, believe it or not, even in a state like New York, there's a lot of rural districts. And quite frankly, they get left behind because everybody thinks about the large urban areas. I too hear what you're all saying in the idea that we've got to pay better attention to our rural students because they matter like all students do.
100% well said. You're getting me pumped up, Dr. Casey. Nikki, over to you.
Good morning. My name is Nikki Laverne. I am from Livingston Parish, Louisiana. I taught 10 years at Doyle High School, where I taught kids in 7th grade, again in 9th grade, again in 10th grade, and then again 11th grade. So definitely experienced some fun rural education. Now I am at the district office as the technology facilitator for our district, and I also am the ELA facilitator for our virtual students, 6th through 8th grade.
All right. Thanks, Nikki. And Kevin.
Good morning from Alberta. I'm actually in Altario, Alberta, in the east central side of the province, almost about 10 minutes from Saskatchewan. I'm a principal of a very small school in Altario of 60 students, K to 12. And I'm also a principal down the road, 50 kilometers down the road, of Concert School, a K-12 school with 250 students. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Great to have you here, Kevin. And when I saw Alterio, I thought, is someone playing something clever there with Alberta and Ontario, sort of merging those two names? I don't know if that's the true origin, but just showing my ignorance here. So I'm discovering more of Alberta, and it's great to have you on board. Well, let's move into question number two. What are some of the best things about working in rural education? Let's start by celebrating the wins that you all experienced that urban educators need to know more about. So Kevin, I'll go back to you. What's one thing that you can celebrate in rural ed?
I absolutely love the relationships that we build. We don't just teach in a school, we teach in a community. We belong to an entire community, and we absolutely know everyone. We know who's a cousin to who. Parents, in a way, some people might see it as a negative thing, but I love the fact that no matter where I go, I meet with people that know the school, that are passionate about the school, and we're just one giant family.
Amazing. Nikki.
I mean, I'm going to echo what he said. The relationships you build with these kids, you see them from when they come into our school, and by the time they graduate, you feel like you're part of the family. In fact, there are several families here in Livingston that I feel like I'm a part of. I still attend some of their things, and they've been long gone out of the school district. And you celebrate wins with them as well. We had a kid who went hunting, killed a deer, but didn't want to be tardy for school. So he had it in the back of his truck. And we're like, let's go check it out. So we all went outside to go check out his kill from that morning. So cool victories.
It's a learning moment, right? It's a learning moment. So yeah, very good. We're going to hear some cool stories. I have a feeling some good stories are going to come out of this conversation. Casey.
Tim, I want to start by saying Principal Nikki, you both are right on, absolutely correct. It's about the kids. I am super proud of Sydney, New York, near Binghamton, Oneonta, and Utica, because my students were taught by National Presidential Science Teachers of the Year and are part of the Upper Susquehanna Initiative to look at pollution, to look at how different geology and hydrology impact. And the third area is that I have students who have not only gone on to major league colleges, but they've also come home and opened new businesses, such as Tim Schubert's Tax Shop. Now, mind you, I haven't been with some of these kids in 20 years. They're now adults with families of their own. And you know what I'm super proud of? When they hit me up on Facebook, they tell me how much they really appreciated the fact that as a community, we always came together to celebrate the successes, to cry on each other's shoulders in the crisis, but more importantly, at the end, we were one.
Amazing. And we do want to talk about the crisis and how the last year has been experienced in those rural contexts. Tammy, when you think about wins and celebrations, what's one thing that you love about rural education?
Well, a couple of years ago, I became a grand teacher. That's a teacher who teaches the children of students they've taught. So in rural education, that happens more than it gets to happen in urban areas. And like everybody's talked about, the relationships that you build, I am still connected with students from every single year that I've taught, what they've gone on to do. You know, I teach middle school. That's predominantly where my career has been. And so for students to go through high school and come back and connect with you has just been so, so super amazing. But like Casey was talking about, all the things that rural ed kids do that don't get the same coverage in the media, but they are doing some really amazing things that handle the problems in their areas that are so unique and so different than, you know, the rural problems in my area are different than the rural problems in Melody's area or Nikki's area. And watching the kids come together and figure that out, that's really, yes, place-based education, Casey. That is really the key for what makes rural so super special.
That's a great point. And I'm glad that point came up early here, because we don't want to sort of oversimplify all of rural education down into one profile. There are going to be different looks and circumstances in each of your contexts. So thank you for raising that point. Melody, one thing that you really love and appreciate about rural ed.
I mean, I was a young teacher and it was, I mean, literally I was the youngest teacher my first year of teaching in the district that I worked in. We had one elementary, one middle, and well, and I was in an intermediate school and a high school. And, because of that, just like I talked about earlier, all the hats that you wear, and I never thought about it, but like I got to be in charge of grants as a second year teacher, which definitely got me into teaching in a larger district when I was able to go, because they saw all these skill sets that I was able to take on at my first 3 years. You know, coaching was something that I didn't think that I was going to do when I was going, when I was in college. So I got to form relationships with, of course, my elementary students, but also the different high school students and parents. And, you know, I was a pretty poor teacher. I didn't get paid a lot. I think I cleared like $1,000 a month after, you know, I took taxes out and everything. And after I paid my bills and I was still like trying to get out of debt, I think I had $100 left over every month. And I felt like sometimes, am I going to eat? But the community, I will never forget this. I felt like I was like an old school, like 100 years ago, I felt like the community adopted me. I never had to worry about what I ate. I was always invited over to families, you know, to play cards with them after dinner. And those are some of my fondest memories of my first years of teaching. And I'm still friends with those people. So.
Amazing. Well, relationships was a strong theme there as we went around, and a number of other things came up as well. I think someone mentioned place-based education. I know we're going to talk more about that. Each of you has some unique features right there in your context and community that that maybe other learners don't have access to, right? And sometimes we forget the amazing benefits right in our own backyard. Let's move into the challenges, though. And we talked about this year of crisis. I know there are other challenges on the horizon. In your mind, what are some of the greatest challenges facing rural educators and learners today? Melody, I'll go back to you on this one.
Well, we talked about the relationships being strong, but sometimes there's a disconnect. I remember when the pandemic first started happening, and a lot of my Alaskan teacher friends just were talking about, like, you know, a lot of people were like, don't just give them worksheets, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, the internet and Wi-Fi is not necessarily, when you get outside of Anchorage, you know, our students in Alaska, you might as well be in some places like a third world country. I mean, they don't have like houses with all of indoor plumbing. I mean, it's the craziest thing. We're in it, the same country, but they don't have the access to the Wi-Fi and things that like we take for granted when we live in cities. So that's one of the problems, is just getting internet connection.
I knew that one would come up quickly. Can I just follow up and say, like, do you have, are the mobile phone networks building and expanding fairly steadily there through Alaska as well?
My husband works for GCI. It's the largest, telecom place here. I mean, he knows the different towers. Like when we drive places, he's like, yep, that tower. And you know, we're still like, I think 15 years behind in a lot of ways when we talk about internet and access like that.
Tammy, are there other challenges besides internet access that come to mind for you?
Well, it kind of ties with it, but at the same time, the lack of market share in a rural district is huge. So when these big companies roll out their initiatives, they want to go places that have big bang for the buck. In rural districts, we're not allowed to participate in these brand new initiatives. We have to get them after they've rolled out, or even after they've been discontinued, because the market share wasn't there in the beginning. I can't even begin to tell you the number of times I've seen something on Twitter and go, oh, that would be really great. Oh, well, I'm more than 50 miles from a market share that was large enough. So my kids are out of it. So we have to improvise. So yes, it's a negative, but it turns into a positive when we improvise and make it happen anyway.
I like that term of market share, and that makes a lot of sense to me, just in terms of drawing different supports and resources to your school and district. Casey, challenges. You've written a book on the topic. I know we'll come back to that later. Not all about challenges. I should be careful about that. But what's one challenge that comes to mind?
Well, Tim, I think what's really critical, and I've said this, is we've got to hashtag change the narrative. One of the biggest issues we face is in federal, state, local policy, as well as even internally in our rural schools, we need to change the narrative away from a deficit ideology and a deficit story, and rural as poor, rural as non-existent, rural as a deficit. This is killing us because it's a trope. It's an easy journalistic story. Rural is deficient. And this became very obvious in the last few years. And I think one of the areas that we often forget is that we have amazing students, amazing teachers, amazing people, and amazing communities. And quite frankly, I really cringe every time I hear or I read a deficit narrative. It's lazy, it's inappropriate, and we've got to hashtag change the narrative.
I like that. So a deficit narrative or mindset is in some ways sort of self-perpetuating, right? Nikki, when you think of challenges, we don't want to sort of be doom and gloom here, but what's, practically speaking, what's one challenge that comes to mind for you?
So apart from the connectivity issues, which I think we're all going to have, we're in parishes here in Louisiana, which is kind of the equivalent of counties in your other places. So our parish has 26,000 students. Well, we have big schools up in the northern part, but then the smaller part is where we have all our rural things. So when people hear about our parish, they assume everyone's kind of the same. So our big schools are able to offer opportunities that our smaller schools can't. And sometimes we feel like things are catered to the larger schools, whereas the middle schools or the smaller schools, we're really just trying to get as many things as we can get done, or things just aren't available. So that's a huge challenge, is that, you know, we really want access to these things. It's just not feasible where we are located.
And Kevin, challenges.
Well, I'm going to echo what Casey said about changing the narrative. I call it, we need to stop apologizing. And I feel, especially here in our province, often we have plans for rural Alberta, and they, for some odd reason, they don't include education, and they don't put education at the center of it. And any plans with around sustainability of rural communities or revitalization of rural communities, I believe that the school needs to be at the center of it. People come to communities for good schools. And if we stop apologizing about rural education, we start saying actually the great things that we are doing in our schools, and who wouldn't want to raise a family in our local rural communities? That's the policy that needs to be driven from the province on down.
Awesome stuff. Well, there you have it. The government, our political leaders and structures need to be a part of changing that narrative as well. Let's get into a focus on technology. And Brian Carpenter, who is joining us from Abbotsford, BC, said, you know, there's that link between rural ed and distance learning. They're not always the same, but there's a lot of overlap, right? And so we know that digital technology apps and platforms have transformed K-12 learning in a very short number of years. We're talking rural and urban. What has been and will continue to be its impact on rural ed? So there are some positives here and there's some challenges here. Kevin, when you think about the impact of technology, where do you see things right now and where do you see things going in the short term?
Well, I think the fact that we're small schools, we use a ton of technology for video conferencing. We try to bring in master teachers to teach to students in a bunch of different schools. And the benefit of this or the silver lining, when schools were shut down, it was announced on a Sunday afternoon in Alberta. By Tuesday, our entire division was back up and teaching students online because we had all the infrastructure and our students knew how to use all the programs, and it was as seamless as can be. So we actually kind of led the province in that way, just because of the work that we had been doing already that we were forced to do based on our small sizes.
That makes a ton of sense. I love that. And I want the ed tech nerd part of me wants to dig into some of the platforms and maybe learning management systems that you're using for that. But Nikki, what has that looked like for you? What is how is technology impacting your context and where do you see it going?
So at the very beginning, when we all went sit, you know, we were all stay at home, we did not have that in place. And the teachers were busting their tails to try to get these kids educated during that 2 month, 3 month period that we were home. And it was a struggle. So over the summer, we really trained our teachers in how to use Google Classroom, how to use Flipgrid. That's been a huge one. And Edpuzzle as well. Those three have been a huge turnaround for us. Flipgrid and Edpuzzle, because the kids can drive to wherever they need to go, hit the internet, do what they need to do, turn it in, and then go back home. And it doesn't have to be something that's done live at that moment.
I am so glad you mentioned Edpuzzle. I'm such an Edpuzzle booster. I think it's underrated as a tool. Casey, when you think about the impact of technology, what comes to mind for you?
Well, I think one of the areas we have to think about is this. When all of our grants, when all of our systems of funding are built on per pupil allocations, so the number of kids equals the number of money, rural schools always lose out because they're small. Thank goodness we have larger organizations such as the BOCES in New York State, which are larger groups to help us. Rural schools have been doing amazing work for technology for years. And I want to give a huge shout out to specifically John Sipple at Cornell University, because John has provided technology, he has provided data, he has provided the World Wide Web to upstate rural schools in New York and allowed them to be smart about how they can use technology. Rural schools, we've got to change the narrative. And one of the areas that I also want to share is place-based education and technology should be spreading rural into urban, because it's in my opinion, and it's humble, that rural districts are actually the reform labs to improve urban education, not the other way around. And technology is one place where what Principal Kevin said, what Nikki said, all of my colleagues have said before, is this critical point. You start in doing amazing things in rural communities because we have to. And then the urban schools, where they don't have to, they should be looking to us. Huge shout out to a really critical effort that the Australian Rural Schools Association did, because pre-pandemic, they had it down. Nobody asked how rural Australia did what they did. They've been doing distance learning now for two generations of students. We were all running around trying to figure out what to do, but they nailed it. Also, I want to give a huge shout out to people like Nikki, who've moved into, and Tammy, Tammy as well, who've moved into the Central District office and are providing these supports, because technology is only as good as the ability of the teacher to use it. We make a really bad assumption that just because the technology is out there, people know how to use it. We've got to do better in helping to ensure that everybody knows how to use that amazing technology.
You dropped a number of good points there. I want to shout out Mark Turner. Speaking of shout outs, he says, "Preach it, Casey. I think the rural settings offer a lab to innovate and move learning forward." And Brian says, "DL schools are the research centers too." And more comments coming in. Okay, Tammy, over to you. When you think about technology, what comes to your mind? Where are your passions?
I teach computer science in a rural school. I teach Python programming in a rural school. I have now for over 5 years. It's there. The opportunities are there to watch the students do what they do. You know, I coach esports. That's completely technology driven. We just have to be able to share what the kids are doing, showcase what they're doing on a grander and grander scale. It's just so amazing to me to watch. I mean, okay, I started teaching before there were computers in the classroom. I started teaching before the district office had computers. And I've watched my career grow from, okay, we have overhead projectors, and now we have the internet. Every kid in my classroom has the internet at their fingers and a device that they can carry home with them. I mean, it's just amazing to me to see how far in the last 30 years education has grown. And yet we still keep that relationship at the back, that's the foundation of it all. Rural, urban, it doesn't matter. That's still the foundation of it all. And that's where, you know, distance learning is great, but we're never going to actually replace that relationship with the teacher.
We'll get right back to this conversation in a moment. But first, have you received your free fidgets yet? Fidgets are interactive USB sensors that make physical computing easy. There's no soldering, wiring, or breadboarding. Simply plug in a sensor, write a few lines of code in your favorite language, and go. Fidgets are used by thousands of STEM professionals all over the world and are now available for educators and students. If makerspaces, passion projects, Genius Hour, PBL, or coding are a part of your teaching practice or your students' interests, you'll want to check out Fidgets. Try it out for free by visiting bit.ly/fidgetsonfire. When you do, you'll receive your free Fidgets Getting Started kit, and you'll also be helping the podcast. So thank you in advance for that. Once again, visit bit.ly/fidgetsonfire. That's P-H-I-D-G-E-T-S on fire to receive your free starter kit from Fidgets. Now, let's get back to our conversation.
No, that's true. And when we think about technology, sometimes that question comes up, right? Will technology replace us? I don't think it ever will. You can't automate empathy, is what I always come back to. Melody, when you think about technology, you mentioned in the comments some of your teachers are EdTech leaders in the district. What else comes to mind in terms of where is technology going for rural ed?
Yeah, like the teachers I know, they are so connected. And I mean, they're, you know, different in different places. Some are in smaller communities, some are, you know, in Fairbanks and just different communities spread around. And they call it the bush here too. So it's incredible because they're hungry for it. The teachers that, and I've got to meet a lot through our ISTE affiliate, ASTE. I mean, they're hungry to learn new things, to build their communities. And they're leaders. And we have an Alaskan Ed chat every Monday night. And it's amazing to see how they just lead the way. And I mean, it's hard to describe because even I have been in the lower 48 for most of my life. But when you come to places like this, they have specialized, it's incredible. But I just want to give kudos to all of the Alaskan teachers if they're watching. I mean, I have never seen so many teachers wear the different hats that you and I probably would never think of just because it's a different kind of place here. But they are hungry to learn and they are leading the way. And I can see it growing because of them. So they're connected. And I think that's really important. They find a way to be connected.
That is awesome. Now, just thinking about those connections and the communities, the PLNs and the LMSs, dropping a lot of letters here, but when you think about the learning management systems and the tools, let's talk about learning. And I want to do a quick follow-up to this round. Let's call it a lightning round. Nikki mentioned a few tools, and that gets me interested. What are the tools that have really impacted what you can do with your learners and the ways that they are connected, the ways that they can participate in the learning process? Melody, let's go back around, and Nikki, I don't know if anything else comes to mind when we get to you, but Melody, what are those tools that have really been saviors over the last year, especially?
I gotta give a shout out to Nearpod. I am a Nearpod pioneer, and I use it with my own kids. I teach my own kids, so I'm teaching kindergarten, you know, second, fourth, and sixth right now. And the cool thing about Nearpod is there's so many things that overlap age group wise, and when you're not teaching, you know, I get to do my own whatever I want with my kids for the most part. And I don't have to stick within grade levels just because my kids are kindergarten, second. If they're ready for third grade, you know, stuff, I go there. But Nearpod has been our savior, and they have done so much for educators all over the world. So I got to give a shout out to them.
All right, Nearpod.
If I had to choose one technology, it would be them.
Yeah, for sure. Tammy, what about you?
Oh, gosh. The entire Google suite, you know, the Google Workspace, they renamed it. The Canvas LMS has just been a godsend for my little district, allowing us to do conferences with the kids and keeping everything in one tight little place. But for my classroom personally, there's this little unknown site called Trinket.io that allows me to do Python programming on a Chromebook. And so we can take our programming anywhere on campus we want to. We don't have to stick to my classroom. And that's just, that's been a huge factor for me personally.
If you want to really light up your Python learners, take them to Code Combat. I don't know if you're familiar with that website, Tammy. Casey, tools and learning management systems. It was interesting to hear Canvas. I'm not really too familiar with Canvas. I'm more of a Google Classroom educator in my context. What about you? What's working for your district?
Well, I'll tell you this. I am a firm believer that any technology is a tool. You can even use those old overheads, because one of the biggest things I think is that we've got to start looking at where our students are. And I'm going to tell you, Twitter, Facebook, real solid professional development areas. I cannot believe the amount of research and the amount of new information I have found because I became active on Twitter, and how I tell my students to go onto Twitter and throw out a question with a hashtag, start following people, become part of the conversation. I would have never met Mel or Tammy if I had not been on Twitter. And it has made me a much better researcher. It's made me a much better practitioner. And like I write about in my book, oh my God, the sins of when I was a rookie teacher 20 years ago. Oh, I am so thankful that those students have forgiven me. Because boy, oh boy, our students have literally the universe at their fingertips. They literally have the ability to go into Alaska, Australia, Ireland, Florida, Louisiana, Alberta, wherever they want to, with the power of Twitter. And you know what? It's an app on their phone. So that, I think, is something else. And I'm just going to shut up after this because I talk a lot. But these devices have become some sort of deity sent for teachers, because you can make your classroom 9,000 times more interactive. We just have to get back to good basic fundamentals in education, which is be a teacher, be passionate, be engaging, and be ready to on the dime go, I don't know, let's find that out together. Folks, Google it.
Wow. Mic drop right there. Brian Carpenter says, preach it, Casey. Keep going. Keep talking. And I love the vote for Twitter, by the way. If you are a rural educator watching this and maybe you tried Twitter, I feel like the experience of a lot of educators is they tried Twitter at some point and they tweeted out a few things into the void, got no response, said, this isn't for me, and moved on. Well, make sure you use hashtag rural ed or tag any of the people on this panel. We'll give you some love and make sure that you are connected in your Twitter experience. Nikki, back to tools. You mentioned a few. Any others that come to mind?
Yeah, actually. So I'm a Google innovator, so I'm big into the Google stuff. But I can say if I had to choose one Google thing, would be Google Slides. I have used them for literally everything. And they're so versatile that you can make it a slide a website. And we use that with our kids a ton to link to different things. I know I said Flipgrid and Edpuzzle, which as a virtual teacher, I'm using both of those heavily. But the other one is Padlet. And because we're rural, we're cheap. So we don't buy a lot of things. We love free stuff. And so Padlet allows three, and we've learned how to archive, reuse, and do that kind of thing, because we got to be creative when we don't have money. So those three would be my Edpuzzle, Flipgrid, and Padlet for sure.
I hope no one from Padlet is listening right now, but I've gone ahead and created a premium Padlet account that I share with all of my middle school team. And that's how we get around the three maximum.
Yeah. And I do quizzes. That's another one. I use that to do review games for all of my kids. And it is great. And I paid for that one because I like it so much.
Quizzes has a pretty loyal following. Absolutely. Kevin, what is the learning management system there in your school and district?
We use all things Google at this point. And the Google Classroom and the Google Meets are invaluable. You know, snow days are now a thing of the past. There's no such thing as a snow day anymore because classes just continue. My kids hate it, but the teachers love it. We never have to worry about trying to get that work in because just join from your living room, wherever you are, and it works perfectly. Even the sick days, we have students that will just message the teacher, not feeling well today, and they just throw up the Google Meet in the classroom and everything just continues. So education has changed in the last year, the embracing of technology. But the point, the one point I want to make, and Casey kind of made the point, no matter what technology we use, it still gets down to teaching, and it still gets down to the relationships that you build over those platforms. I actually have a student teacher in my building right now, and she is dating a guy from our community that she met in a virtual classroom. And so it even relationships to a whole new level, let me tell you.
That is awesome. Well, shout out to that couple. That's really cool. That's a good storyline. Let's keep it moving and get into question five. What are some current projects or initiatives that you are excited to be maybe recently finished or currently working on? And this is a great opportunity to reach out to the rural ed community and let them know who you are and what you can offer rural educators. Kevin, back to you.
If I may, I'll speak to two of them. And the first one was very much done by students in our school here in Ontario. One of our staff members, our librarian, was diagnosed with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, and our students decided to enter a contest that our division puts on called the Inclusivity Project, where they're challenged to make a difference in the world. And they decided to raise money and awareness for ALS, and in 4 weeks, they raised $25,000, imagine, in our small little school of 60 students. And they won the contest, which was a 10-day all-inclusive trip to the Caribbean. And they turned around and donated it all back to ALS because they felt like it was more important for ALS to receive the money than for them to go on a trip. So we, as a school now, are very strong supporters of ALS, and we really promote that at every opportunity we can. In the meantime, that staff member has passed away, so we do that in her honor. The other thing that we're working on in our school here in Ontario is we've really decided to embrace our agriculture heritage. So we actually do have a farm right beside the playground. Each morning, our students, when they arrive to school, they start the day with doing chores. We're raising steers, turkeys, chickens, sheep. We have crops. And it's a great program where our students are making all the decisions. They're leading the farm. And at the end of the year, based on the profits, they receive scholarships for future education.
That is really, really cool. Out here in my neck of the woods on the West Coast, we've got a program called Delta Farm Roots, which I know builds PBL, a PBL learning experience right around running a small farm. So plenty of unique opportunities in that setting. And your students sound pretty impressive, Kevin. So shout out to them. Nikki, what are some projects that you are passionate about? Something, yeah, nice, Melody. That's awesome. Yeah, something you can share with rural educators.
Okay, well, I actually have two as well. The first one is we call it the STEAM Express, and it was a school bus that we took, and using donated money, we raised about $50,000 to gut this bus, turn it into almost like an RV, so it will function on propane, or it can plug into the wall and work. And we fill it with STEAM supplies, so science, technology, engineering, art, and math. And we have all kinds of things, and the purpose of this was to drive out to these rural locations to show people the different options and things that they can have access to. And it has sparked STEAM for our district in a whole new way. Last year, we held a STEAM Expo, and it was the weekend before COVID hit. We had a massive turnout of over 1,000 people for our first year, and we were so excited to see people get excited about STEAM. Well, then once COVID hit, we realized parents are not being trained in these materials. Teachers are being trained, students are being trained, parents are just kind of getting it from their kids. And so my focus for this past year and focus for this coming summer is on parent training. In fact, in August, we have a parent training that is going to be taking place via StreamYard and using the global GEG, so the Global Google Educator. Yes, so it's very cool. So we're going to be doing it in South Louisiana to kick it off to see how it works. And we're hoping to expand nationally and maybe even internationally after that, because our parents are where our weak link is when it comes to technology.
And we love you, parents. But you know what? I think that's the story in urban settings as well. I mean, things are just moving that quickly. I even think just over a year ago, a lot of educators didn't even know what Zoom and Google Meet were, or maybe never used them. And so if things are changing rapidly for us, I think as a parent, it's tricky to keep up. And I can speak as a parent as well on that count. Thank you, Nikki. That is some exciting stuff. Casey, what have you got going on?
Well, first of all, please donate to the Prairie Principal, because my God, that is a moving story. Wow. Holy smokes. And also, way to go, Nikki, including the parents, because that's awesome. I am, of course, 1 year out from thinking about teaching. I am trying to raise the profile of rural education by speaking. But the other area, to build on the idea of STEAM and STEM, is I'm working on another book, and it's called Steaming Ahead, STEAHM, because I believe one of the problems that we have is our civic and our humanities has fallen. So I'm in the process of writing another book about how to integrate STEM and the humanities back together to an integrated, locked curriculum that builds on place-based education. I don't have a publisher for the book yet, but I'm sure it will be out there. And also, I am hugely supporting Melody with her I'm Sorry story, because I truly believe that we have a problem where everybody says we're lacking in civic education, but we're really, really lacking in civility education. We've got to hashtag change the narrative.
My thoughts are going in lots of different directions here. Are you familiar with Chris Woods? Anyone on the panel, have you come across Chris Woods, the Daily STEM, I think is his account on Twitter. He has recently moved from rural to urban. I was just thinking while you were talking about STEAM and adding that H there, he fits that profile really well. So if you're not connected with Chris, make sure to reach out to Chris Woods on Twitter. Tammy, what about you? What are some projects that you are involved in right now in terms of rural ed?
Well, speaking of Chris Woods, he was actually in my district at the beginning in August to help our elementary STEM school get started and get going. So yes, we are very, very definitely connected. Yeah, you know, six degrees or whatever. Not even going to go there. Yes, Scott, I agree. Chris is one fun dude. So the initiative that I am currently embroiled in is esports at the middle school level. There are tons and tons of opportunities for middle school students to connect with each other and using the things that they already enjoy, gaming. My school, we use the game called Rocket League, and we use Minecraft. We just started Minecraft about a month ago, and we had our big kickoff Thursday afternoon. But one of the things that I am doing is I am bringing together the Florida middle schools. We are creating a middle school esports network through NASEF and the Florida Alliance, which is the Florida Scholastic Esports League, FLSEL. We have right now, we're getting ready to start our short spring season, and we have probably 10 districts wanting to add to that for the fall, perhaps. So very definitely, definitely something that you don't have to be an urban school to do gaming, to do esports, to connect. My students now live stream from our school every time we have a competition. So every match that we have smslivestream.com is our website. It goes right to their live streams. Yes, Scott, so many opportunities. We are creating a new CTE, career and technical ed pathway, on the backside of esports with all the broadcasting and the event planning and the just so much behind it. I never even knew it existed. Oh, my gosh. The amount of learning I've done in the last year and a half has just been phenomenal. And the amount of learning I'm watching my kids learn how to create broadcasts and run OBS and connect to the live streams and do all of these things is just, it's just so amazing to watch them. You know, we set the bar and they meet it, and we set the bar and they meet it, and we set the bar and they meet it. And now we're connecting with schools all over the country, trying to help promote the idea that middle school esports, it's not the same as what, you know, we don't do the League of Legends, we don't do the first person shooter stuff, but there is a place, and it helps kids bridge that really hard time in their life that is middle school. I mean, how many of us on this panel would want to go through middle school again? I never wanted to be a middle school teacher. 30 years ago, I was like, I'm not doing middle school. And that is where I was, where the good Lord placed me. And there's a reason I'm there. And to watch this happen with these kids, it's totally rad. Totally rad. So Run Educator asked if they have social distancing with esports. Some of them, some of the programs do. It depends on the program. My program, we social distance in my classroom while we do it. The kids, we are not a mask mandate school district. So the kids that wish to be socially distanced can be, and the ones that don't, there's not a whole lot I can do about that. We also have districts who the kids are playing from home. So, you know, we have the local space in my room for those that don't have internet. We all, it's just so much fun. So much fun.
Great comment from David here on the esports, meeting kids where they are at. And that does not apply in the rural settings, right? Teamwork, SEL, leadership, business, coding, art, the four C's, it's all there. It is a sort of a complex context. And I think esports deserves its own show here on the roundtable at some point. Melody, when you think of projects, initiatives, what comes to your mind?
Well, first of all, I want to give every single person that's watching and on this panel a high five. I mean, seriously, so touched by your stories. You guys are amazing. So I'm doing a lot of virtual read alouds for the I'm Sorry story. All you have to do is DM me. I have got to talk to a lot of rural communities. Some of my favorites are middle schoolers in Nebraska. I just spoke with a teacher, and I think it was in the Toronto area, but I got to work with classes from kindergarten to eighth grade, and they're so excited about writing. So we talk about the social emotional aspect of the story, but also the older students are always interested in writing books. So I'm definitely game for that. And all you have to do is DM me. I will wake up early in the morning to speak with your class, because usually I'm 4 hours behind everybody. But I also just want to say, I have got to connect a lot of rural educators to the different like projects that I'm doing with other educators, like with Alice Keeler, with EduMatch, with Rochelle Dene Poth. So if you are somebody who is like writing, you want to write a blog about what you're doing in your rural classroom, please contact me, just DM me. If you want to share a blog out there, like I can help you, I can network all of that for you. So the voices that are being heard is very important. I want to help keep that going.
And you are fantastic at it, Melody. It's such a pleasure to have you with us. I know you are actively involved. You're doing so much amplification of voices, so much networking, and it's really fun to see. So on that note, let's wrap this up with signing off and letting people know how they can best connect. We've got our Twitter handles on the screen. I know that, but for the podcast listeners, go ahead and read those out loud and let people know where else they can find you. And one more thing, if you have something, I know Tammy dropped a website, others have dropped websites. If you'd like to share your screen when it comes to your turn, you are certainly welcome to do that. That's something I forget to let guests that know that they can actually do. So if you want to open something in a separate tab and be prepared to share that when we come back to you, go ahead and do that. But Melody, you're in so many places. What's the best place to find you?
I was going to be like in the comments, you know what? MJ McCallie writes, it's crazy. It started as my school handle, MJ McCallie. So just find me basically on Instagram. Everything is MJ McCallie writes. I think my YouTube is that. So two L's, and you can find me on Twitter. But yes, thank you for that compliment. I do want to amplify the voices of students and educators. That is something I feel very strongly about. I am on TikTok, but I don't necessarily talk about education on TikTok, but that's another great place. And yeah, so you can find me, mjmcallywrites.com is where everything is set up.
If you want to see some really bad dancing, follow Teachers on Fire on TikTok. Tammy, over to you. How can we connect with you?
I am at TG_Neil on Twitter. That's probably the easiest way for people to reach out to me. The esports club is smsesports.com. Or the live stream is smslivestream.com. We're just doing what we do.
All right. And Casey, how can we connect with you?
Well, the best way to get a hold of me is at Casey, CASEYJ_EDU. Unfortunately, with a last name like mine, it's a little hard to find Jacobowski. And I'm going to share my screen really quick. So let's see if we can do this correctly. We might not. Nope, we're not going to be able to do it. That's okay. I do have a Weebly site at ctjacobowski, tim.weebly.com. But again, the best way to get a hold of me is on Twitter. I do have a couple of Facebook pages and LinkedIn, and I blog, but I'm almost always on Twitter. And if you can't get a hold of me, just Google me. Just Google thinking about teaching KCJ. I pop up.
The nice thing about having an unusual last name, and I found this, is you actually are a whole lot more Googleable, as long as people can spell it properly, you know? And so that's one nice thing. Nikki, how can we connect with you?
So you can pretty much get a hold of me through Twitter. My handle, and of course I didn't put it up there, is at Laverne Nikki. So it's just my last name in front of my first name. At Laverne Nikki on Twitter. And I also have a website called gadgetsandglitter.com. It's just where I kind of post the blog stuff, post my resume, post all the parent stuff that I'm working on. So feel free to come check it out.
All right. Sounds good. I'm so glad to be connected with all of you. And Kevin.
Twitter, Facebook, wherever it is, just search Prairie Principal. That's how we connected on Twitter. And my main place that I write on is my Facebook page, but I'm on all the other sites as well. So Prairie Principal, Kevin Van Leggen. It's kind of a strange name as well. So Google me and you'll find me.
Kevin, I just had to ask, how did the E in Prairie not make it into your Twitter handle? I was curious about that.
It was too long. So I had to take a letter out and I thought I would take the E out.
All right. Well, watch out for that if you are looking to connect with Kevin. To all of my panelists today, thank you so much for joining me. I know we've only scratched the surface of rural education issues, but I'm so glad to connect with all of you, learn a little bit more, and hopefully build some relationships just a little bit stronger going forward.
My name is Tim Cavey, and I'm proud to contribute to the education conversation through the Teachers on Fire podcast. If you enjoyed this roundtable episode, make sure to subscribe to the Teachers on Fire channel on YouTube, where you can interact with me and my guests every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern. And if you haven't yet, you can also connect with me at Teachers on Fire in your favorite social media spaces to catch more from me and hear from amazing educators who are bringing growth and transformation to K-12 education today. When you listen to this content and share your support on social media, that pours fuel on my fire and inspires me to continue this important work of amplifying voices and sharing ideas. Thanks again for listening to this roundtable episode. In these challenging times, take care, share an encouraging message to lift up a colleague, and keep that fire for learning burning bright.